Batter Up. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 80 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So the Mets have only played, well, I guess now they've technically played 6 games as of this recording. We are recording this on Tuesday night, April 13th, as the second game of the doubleheader against the Phillies is going on. But as of yesterday, they had only played 5 of their first 10 scheduled games because of a combination of the Nats' COVID outbreak to start the season that delayed their season, and then weather canceled 2 other games, one of which was, postponed after Marcus Stroman threw like 7 pitches or something. It was like completely ridiculous. They started the game when it shouldn't have been started. Marcus Stroman was clearly getting impatient on the mound because it was pouring, and he just was like, I'm not gonna throw the baseball. It just kind of kept like throwing baseballs out, stalling, and then finally they were like, all right, we're calling it. So that was kind of
so technically that's just suspended game.
Yeah, so that is a suspended game. Worth noting, because with the current rules, when that game is made up, it will be a 9-inning game. Unlike these games that are being played today, because yesterday's game was postponed outright before the game began, that the makeup today is 2 7-inning doubleheaders. However, the first game was actually 8 innings because the Mets walked it off in the 8th inning, which I did not expect to happen, especially after the Phillies took the lead in the top of the 8th with their free gift runner. But the Mets returned the favor by scoring their free gift runner and then one more to win the game, which was very nice. It was a very pleasant turn of events that I was not expecting, because this game, the first game, was going very, very Metsy before that.
To my knowledge, the Mets have never actually won a game during a doubleheader. They have been swept 100% of the time forever. This is just off the top of my head. So I was also pleasantly surprised. Yeah. I mean, that's just my... I feel like if you were to look it up, they would be swept like 40% of the time or more. I mean, I'm sure it's ridiculous.
We did get that one magical game of Scooter and the Big Man. That was a doubleheader.
Yes.
And I'm wearing my Scooter and the Big Man shirt right now. I feel very foolish.
Well, it's perfect since they're playing a doubleheader, so you subconsciously knew.
I just knew.
Yes.
But so wait, so that's actually news to me, though. So for a game to be 7 innings, it has to be predetermined prior to the initiation of play that this is a 7-inning game.
Correct.
But also, I think Thomas made a good point. Our fellow Mason Avenue writer, Thomas, like, how do they pick that up? Like, what, I think they're, it's in August. Like, what if players are traded? Like, you can't have the same, you might not have the same lineup. So technically, if you're restarting the game, it's a suspended game. What do you do?
I may be showing my ass here, but I don't think you have to have the same lineup for a suspended game.
But what if it's the same batter because it was in the middle of an at-bat?
Well, I think you just pick them up, like, if you, like, pinch whatever hit in the middle of a plate appearance.
Yeah, whatever batter that is in there instead would have the same count. Like, I forget what the count was, if it was, like, 1 and 2 or something on that guy, it will be 1 and 2 on whatever guy they put.
Okay.
He will start with a 1 and 2 count.
But I also kind of like the idea of having to recreate all of it. Like everybody has to go and like eat what they had for breakfast.
Marcus Stroman, it doesn't matter if it's your turn in the rotation. You have to pitch.
Yeah, no, sorry you pitched yesterday. You got to pitch now. I think that would be... I feel like all the people who have that job in like movie sets where they have to make sure everything looks the same. I think that person could really shine in this scenario. So yes, that's my new rule.
Yes, yeah, so you need to hire one of those people. You need to find one of those people to recreate.
Same haircut, same shoes.
Yes, perfect. Lindor will have to dye his hair again and let it fade. He'll have to dye it again ahead of time and let it fade.
Same haircuts, including for Jeff McNeil, who is suddenly shorn today, looking, I don't know, maybe it's a
breakout.
Good luck, whatnot.
Yeah.
Didn't work this inning, but hey.
I mean, Jeff McNeil, more than anyone, has been hitting into some incredibly hard luck. Fun Jeff McNeil fact, literally until earlier today when he hit that single, his BAPIP was zero. His BAPIP was literally zero. Like,
that's not easy, folks.
It's no, not that's easy not. To do. And it's it's not like he was like hitting poorly. Like he was just hitting into hard outs every single time. Yeah, because before that single, his only hit was that game tying home run he hit. And obviously that's not a ball in play. It's a home run. And so he was hitting his batting average on balls in play was zero. So that was an incredible feat that finally got broken.
That's what we call regression to the mean, folks.
Yes, yes. Like, that is one player whose bad luck can't possibly continue, at least to that degree. But the Mets' bad weather luck might continue because they are, you know, able to get in this doubleheader, but... and they've kind of recalibrated their rotation. So, like, Taijuan Walker pitched the first game of the doubleheader, pitched well. Marcus Stroman's pitching now. And then it's going to be David Peterson tomorrow and Jacob deGrom on Thursday on regular rest. However, Thursday, the forecast is looking awful. Like, rain all day. Hard to find a window in which to get this game in. And it's an afternoon. It's scheduled, I think it's actually noon start, not a 1 o'clock, and so because it's a travel day, so the Mets are immediately going to Denver, where it is supposed to snow over the weekend, Friday and Saturday. So yeah, Jacob deGrom is probably going to get a rain out and then might potentially have to pitch in the snow in Coors. So fun times, folks.
Just pitching on short rest tomorrow, man. Like,
yeah, right? I'm very nervous about I don't want Jake's ERA ruined for like something fluky.
Yep, I'm scared of what Coors might do. I mean, Jake has been so far in his career pretty immune to Coors. He's pitched well there, but I mean, not when it's like 37 degrees and snowing.
I know. I'm really nervous for Jake. I mean, if anybody could do it, like Jake, you never count Jake out, but I don't like it.
Yeah, me neither. In other news that is bad anyway, but might also affect the Mets, another team now has a COVID outbreak, and that is the Chicago Cubs. Their pitching coach tested positive, and then they had to pull three other people out onto the COVID.
The pitching coach, Chris Young, who, just so that everyone knows, is not either of the Chris Youngs you're thinking of.
Yes.
It is an additional third Chris Young. Unrelated.
Jason Adam, Dan Winkler, and Brandon Workman have all been placed on the COVID-related injured list. Now, I don't know. Obviously, it's unclear if those players also tested positive or if this was a contact tracing thing. Because obviously, the pitchers come into contact with the pitching coach quite frequently. So it's just possible that this is contact tracing stuff.
I thought there was an infielder on the list too.
Well, there was another coach. I think the first base coach.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking of then.
But they definitely are having
Duffy.
A moment over there.
Oh, Matt, yes. Duffy. Yeah, the Cubs are having a bit of a COVID situation. They, as of right now, they've called up they've activated two relievers from their taxi squad and promoted someone from the alternate site. So it seems okay, but the Mets are slated to go there after the Rockies. They are traveling to Chicago. And so there remains the potential that series could be impacted by this if it gets worse. So keep an eye on that. Knowing the Mets' luck, the fact that they, like, seem to only be able to get in every other game they're scheduled to play. That might happen, but we'll see. Who knows? Hopefully they've been able to, you know, catch it early, nip it in the bud, get that contact tracing going, and, you know, isolate those players and get it under control. Positive news for the Mets, though. in rare positive news, Carlos Carrasco through Gary Cohen said this during the broadcast in the first of the two games tonight. Carrasco threw a 4-inning simulated game, and he will be sent to the alternate site in Brooklyn to throw 5 innings. And he is also fielding and hitting at this stage. So he's basically doing everything except running. So he's like kind of getting close to being ready to go. So that's good news. I think that he's still on track for the May return that they were expecting initially. So that's good news.
Especially since it did not sound promising when he went down.
Yeah.
Well, because it was, like, conflicting. It was, like, it was a tear, but then it wasn't, and then it was a grade one, but then there was some talk of it being a grade two, so it seemed like there was mixed messaging from the start, but this seems like the best possible outcome.
Yep, so that's good news, and the Mets, obviously, the Mets have gotten away with, like, one sort of kind of positive so far of having so many games canceled is that the Mets have gotten away with not having to use a fifth starter yet. And so it may turn out to be that Lucchese or whoever the Mets use as their fifth starter may only have to start like one or two times before Carrasco ultimately comes back, which is good for the Mets. That's helpful.
Lucchese did look good in that one game he got in.
Yes, he did. And Peterson looked bad. So I don't know. Which kind of goes into like the next point in my notes here is I was going to talk about kind of like some early pros and cons that we're seeing overall. And I think that outside of David Peterson, the starting rotation has absolutely been a pro. Like obviously DeGrom is being himself. The Mets can't score for him, but he's being himself and he looks absolutely great. And Walker and Stroman have both pitched very well. So that's been a positive so far, and the Mets really only had the one clunker of an outing from David Peterson. Other than that, they've gotten solid performances from their rotation.
And that was always the thing, like, going in, the rotation was always projected to be a strength, and at least so far early in the season, they've, Stroman also looks fantastic so far.
Yeah, he looks as good as he has ever looked.
Yeah.
And it's real nice to see that he is just in that rhythm right away.
Yeah, he looks like he's the number two. Like, I think, I don't know.
And Taijuan Walker does too. They both, like, look like they could be right up there.
Because when they got Carrasco and Syndergaard, it's like, okay, are they the number two? But I think Stroman's the perfect fit behind Jake.
I'm just, like, salivating for when the rotation is DeGrom, Stroman, Carrasco, Syndergaard.
Oh, my God, I know.
Is Syndergaard the fifth starter? No, he couldn't be the fifth starter. He'd be the fourth.
No, Peterson. Yeah,
but still, but
Peterson's kicked
out of the rotation either.
Entirely. Taijuan Walker's the fifth starter at that point.
Oh, my God. There's lots of ifs here. There's lots of ifs. But if everyone currently healthy stays healthy, and Carrasco and Syndergaard, I mean, Carrasco should be here in a couple of weeks, it feels like. And then a little bit longer for Syndergaard, but, like, that's the rotation then.
That's scary.
And that's, that is some, like,
imagine, like,
territory right there.
We just saw Taijuan Walker throw a fantastic outing in which he struck out 8 batters in 4 1/3 innings. That's your fifth starter right there at that point. Like,
and it's not his first, you know, spoiler alert to our plans later on, but, like, it's not his first good start. He looked just as much the same last week when the Mets did also, at one moment, play baseball. You know, so it's not like it's coming out of nowhere for him.
Right, right. Most notably with Walker, his velocity is up, which is really good to see. His velocity was, like, in his first start, you know, you kind of, at first you were like, in the first inning, you were kind of like, well, he's amped up. It's the home opener. It's his first start as a Met. He's really excited. But he was touching 96, 97 and sitting mid-90s with his fastball. And I was like, ooh, this is not something that we have seen from Taijuan Walker since before his Tommy John surgery. I think it was his average fastball velocity was up over 2 miles an hour from his 2020 mark, which is pretty incredible. And so I was looking for that in his second start, and he maintained it. I don't think he touched as high like as his first start. I don't think he ever touched like 97 on the gun in this start, but he was sitting the same. So the velocity bump seems to be real. He's still struggling a little bit with, I think, his stamina. He looks really good early, and then he's like sort of trailed off very rapidly, in both his starts. Like in this start, he was looking great, cruising. And then suddenly he lost his command like all at once and got pulled really quickly. So that's something to keep an eye on. Like, can he maintain the velocity bump, but also increase his stamina to the point where he can pitch into like the sixth inning? So we'll see about that, but for now it looks great. Like, he looks great, Stroman looks great, DeGrom is himself. Like, that's really good to have those three guys in your rotation, and then to be joined by Syndergaard and Carrasco eventually will be really good.
It's kind of funny that, like, you know, they built all that pitching for so long, and there was always that talk of like five aces, and now, like, years later, it's kind of funny. Like, what if this, like, motley crew, well, maybe not so motley because they're all good pitchers, but, like, these guys just kind of thrown together could become their five aces that, you know, they've been talking about
for so long. From every corner of the earth comes a yes. ace.
Yes.
Yeah, like Walker, like, was a guy that, like, he was unsigned after when spring training started. He started the day after spring training started, so they just picked him up. You know, Carrasco, everybody forgets about since he was part of the Lindor trade, and Stroman might be one of Brody's only good moves.
Pretty much.
The other major pro, I think, so far is, even though the Mets are not hitting as a whole where we would like, Brandon Nimmo looks great. He's killing the OBP game as usual. He's being his usual Brandon Nimmo self. You can't get the guy out. And so I just feel like it makes the decision to not bat him lead off opening day even more absurd in hindsight.
Yes.
Because, like, never not bat that man lead off ever again, please.
With Dom Smith no more than two or three spots behind him in the lineup,
exactly.
Please. Also,
exactly.
Speaking of early season madness. But no, I'm
best players. Why don't overthink it, especially on opening day and after everything had been delayed? Like, what's the matter with you?
What I really love about Nimmo, especially now, is I truly understand how much every other fan of every other team hates him. He is that player who just gets under your nerves because he's always messing you up somehow and getting on base and smiling that stupid smile. And I'm like, haha, that's our stupid smile. Suck it, Braves.
Yep. Running to first all the time.
Yeah. You don't want him to run to first? Don't throw him four balls.
Yeah. Yep.
Which everyone seems to do. I mean, like, I think, what was the phrase that Gary Cohen used in the first game of the doubleheader? He said something like, there seems to be a force field around the strike zone when Brandon Nimmo is at the plate. Like, pitchers just, like, don't want to throw strikes to him. Because, like,
which is dumb, because that's the best way to get him out.
He doesn't swing at bad pitches. So you can't throw him bad pitches.
I mean, he's not a bad bat, but he's not like an amazing bat. What he is he's got the most incredible eye in baseball. Is it like he can see everything?
It's like his on base percentage is absolutely elite.
Yeah,
like that's just good.
An elite leadoff hitter for sure, which is great. The problem is that the Mets are not driving in any runs.
Wait, nope. Nimmo has a 136 OPS.
Yeah. He does.
Who does?
Nimmo.
I mean, his on-base percentage is like 560 or
500,
something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the problem is that the Mets are not driving him in. And, you know, I mean, they did walk it off in the first game, but that was
their true walk-off. Somehow. They're only, like, walk-off.
Yeah, their only actual walk-off. We shan't speak of the Conforto walk-off. I mean, no, listen.
That never happened.
Womp, womp.
I mean,
we'll pretend McNeil's home run was the walk-off.
Listen, I have a couple things to say about that, I guess. One, that is on the umpire. That is not on Michael Conforto.
Mm-hmm.
It is on the umpire to make the correct call, and the umpire made the wrong call. So it is what it is. The Mets were the beneficiaries of that. Two, that type of thing has happened, not that exact thing, but that type of thing has happened against the Mets more times than I can't count. So for us to be on the benefiting side of it for once, excuse me if I can't bring myself to get upset about it. Sorry.
Like,
not
somebody
actually sorry.
Tweeted.
Well, also, they had like a 70% chance of winning that game anyway.
Exactly, yeah. Because then Pete Alonso comes up with, even if Michael Conforto is out, called out, which would have been the proper call, then Pete Alonso comes up with the bases loaded.
Well, and it's still a tie game.
It's still a tie game. They could have won it in extras for all we know. We don't know.
Nimmo just decided to shake things up by getting on base with a single.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Going the opposite way, too.
Going against brand. Well, she's going to start wearing all black and smoking cigarettes.
And wearing eyeliner and brooding.
But, you know, somebody also pointed out, like, Derek Dietrich did that shit all the time. He was infuriating. He would always stick his elbow out like that. So don't give me that Marlins. Like, he was the king of doing that.
Now, all teams have a guy or guys who do that. And, yeah, you just have to call them out. That's just how you – that's how the game is played.
The umpire has to take control and call them out. That's the umpire's job.
Yep. The umpire made a bad call. It is what it is. I just hope that –
Well, and then also the Phillies, you know, benefited from a blown call. Like, it's the human element in the game.
Yeah, apparently you don't need to touch home plate to score now. Who knew?
Apparently. Even upon replay, too.
So, like, you know, it's on the umpires, it's not on Conforto, and I hope that, I mean, you know, baseball players are going to do what they're going to do because they're all, like, pig-headed jocks. I just hope that Conforto doesn't get thrown at against the Marlins the next time they play.
Well, they had their opportunity and didn't, so it seems to be a dead issue.
Yeah, so we'll see. But yeah, Brandon Nimmo's
Conforto
really...
could certainly use something going on there.
Yeah.
Some kind of something. His mojo is...
Oh, God.
I was going to say, that was the other thing. Like, you're the number three hitter and you have to do that to win.
He's like... not seeing the ball well. He looks lost at the plate. Like, I was going to say, Brandon Nimmo is basically, you know, more or less the only one hitting. I mean, Dom Smith is hitting and Guillorme's
Pete
hitting.
Somewhat.
Pete somewhat. Not quite himself, but a little. And McNeil's having bad luck, as we said. But, like, Conforto is absolutely killing the Mets right now. And he's left more on base than anyone. And they had to drop him in the lineup because they kind of had no choice. He was killing them. And I hope he finds his groove. I feel like he's too good of a hitter to be slumping that long. So I just hope
And the other guy is, of course, Lindor, who is coming into a very high-pressure situation. Like, he needs his time to settle into the team, but, like, he also is not doing a ton for them on that side of the plate. His defense has been amazing, but, like, he's not hitting yet. He will.
His defense has been as advertised and more. But yeah, he's not hitting yet. He is, you know, getting on base. He's drawing walks, so at least he's doing
that. He just drew a walk.
Yeah, good. There you go. Proving my point. At one point, I mean, like, so didn't he hit a double in his first step out in this game? So hopefully he's coming around. But, like, before that double, his slash line was hilarious because he was hitting, like, 160, but his on-base percentage was, like, 340 because he was walking a lot. So that is the sign of a good hitter that, like, even if you aren't seeing the ball well enough to get your base knocks, you are drawing walks when you can to help the team. So at least there's that. But, like, obviously we want more than that from Lindor, and I hope he'll get there.
Can I just say something?
Yes.
Obviously, I've done a lot of research. I've watched some games. JD Davis is the key to this lineup.
The second JD went down, you know, they stopped scoring.
I was going to say, coincidence they can't hit when JD is not in the lineup? I don't think so.
I mean, to be fair, Guillorme and VR have been hitting.
But JD's mojo.
It's the mojo, though. That's
well, and he seems like he's coming back soon too, right?
Yeah, yes, he was taking grounders. He just can't swing the bat right now.
That's a little bit of a problem.
It's just a little. And he's not going to be a defensive replacement anytime
soon. Yeah, J.D. Davis is not going to be a defensive replacement. So the other thing that's been kind of a mixed bag, I had put it in cons, but I'm kind of reconsidering, is the bullpen. So the bullpen's been very mixed right now. Like, they've had good days and bad days. Like, in the first game of the doubleheader, it's funny because they, like, kind of, they blew the lead, but they also pitched really well. And it was due to mostly, like, pretty unfortunate things. A lot of infield hits. Like, Miguel Castro ultimately got burned by the leadoff walk to Hoskins, but two of those balls were strikes. So, like, you know, it's kind of been, and the bullpen's been a mixed bag. Like, Trevor May had that one really horrible outing on opening day, where he was dreadful. And Diaz, who pitched a clean inning today, had a really bad outing his last time out, where he, the Mets were not scoring for Jacob deGrom again, so they were down 1-0, but then Diaz added fuel to the fire, and then they lost 3-0 instead. So, you know,
they weren't going to win that game anyway.
They weren't going to win that game anyway, so I can't get mad about it, but he did look really bad in that game. But then he looked really good today. So, like, you know, I feel like all the Mets, like Trevor May and Edwin Diaz in particular, have both had, like, really good days and really bad days already. And so it's kind of been like, eh, I don't know. Miguel Castro has been consistently pretty good. And the other guys, Lucchese had that one really good relief appearance in long relief that kind of got lost because the Mets were having their butts kicked at that point. But he looked really good. But then, like, Aaron Loop hit Bryce Harper with a pitch when getting Bryce Harper out was his only job in that one game. So there was that. And then, you know, you've got Dellin Betances, who had one bad outing is already on the injured list.
The injured list was with a serious case of can't pitch for shit.
Yeah, serious case of my velocity is down and I'm probably cooked. I, like, as much as it pains me to say it, like, I'm not, like, obviously I'm rooting for him to succeed. I want him to succeed. The Mets are better if he's good. But, like, I wouldn't
They can't count on it.
They can't, no. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the last we see of him. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he's just done, like, forever now.
Oh, and Familia, I think, had a bad outing, but wasn't completely his fault either.
Right. I think Familia's also had a good outing. Like, he's also been in the, like, May-Diaz boat where he's had one bad outing and one good outing.
But, yeah, I feel like he got screwed by something. It was, like a blue pit that shouldn't have fallen or something. I can't remember, I remember thinking it wasn't his fault.
I think it was, yeah, because I think I remember, for some reason, I think I remember that hit that had, like, a 40% chance of being a hit or something. I don't remember now.
Yeah, it was weird. But
yeah, the bullpen's been kind of like, eh. Like, they've been okay, but not great.
You can't
count
on them.
I'm not feeling great about it. I would feel better if, like, David Peterson was in there. Nothing against Peterson. I hope he's in the rotation, you know, going forward, but, like, for right now, that would be nice. I feel like a lot of the good teams tend to have their not quite making the rotation pitchers in the bullpen, and it works to their advantage because they are generally good pitchers. We've never tried that before.
When Seth Lugo's back.
Yay.
That will help.
Also, you know, I feel like Castro and May are just going to be so cooked at the rate they're going.
I'm worried about that because right now the Mets have gotten away with it because they've played so few games. So it's like they get an off day every other day. And so, but that's not going to continue to happen. But I'm hoping by the time, like, they have a stretch of the schedule where they're going to, like, need to use all of their relievers, that, like, Seth Lugo will be back not too long after that, because Seth Lugo is also due back around the same time as Castro, like, in a couple weeks. Like, he's already throwing, so I think he should be back soon. They're projecting, like, a mid-May return, so really they just need to hold down the fort, because once they have, like, one more reliable inning reliever, you don't have to keep, like, you don't have to keep trotting out Castro, May, Diaz every single day. And if the Mets could, like, you know, score some runs and, like, not have every game be, like, 2-1 going into the eighth, that'd be great.
Yeah, so you can bring in Loop and it not being an issue.
Right. Like, that's been the problem. Like, Robert Gizelman hasn't pitched yet.
Ugh.
Loop hasn't pitched in a week. Because, like, and like, I'm not blaming Rojas for that. You can't. You, like, these are guys you cannot trust in 2-1 games. So when you have a bullpen where you can only trust 2 or 3 guys in 2-1 games, you end up overusing those guys. But the key is to not have every game be 2-1 game, to, like, win by a lot sometimes.
Like, I have to keep telling myself, like, it's all going to balance out. It's, you know, a long season. But, you know, it's so Mets that, like, nothing clicks all at once. It's like when the bullpen's going, the offense doesn't go. When the starting pitching is going, the bullpen's bad. It's like, can we just get all our ducks in the row just once? Like, every single aspect. Just try it out and try it for fun. See what
just
happens.
Just for shits and giggles, can we try to have all of our cylinders firing at the same time?
Yeah. Like, hitting, starting pitching, bullpen, all click at the same time, and it would just be fabulous. I dream of that day.
Same.
Someday. It has been heard to happen. Not to the Mets.
No, no, God, no.
In the world, it has happened.
Side note, when Dellin Betances went on the Phantom IL or Real IL, whatever you want to think, they did call up Trevor Hildenberger, and I'm very excited for Trevor Hildenberger to get a shot. I mean, obviously, again, like, if the Mets keep existing in these, like, razor-thin margins, it's going to be hard for him to get in a game, but I'm excited for him to get a shot, because he was a fun, like, upstart guy in spring training. He, like, up until the, like, very last day of spring training, he had retired all the batters he faced via the strikeout. And so he was actually a dark horse king of spring training candidate because of that. And he's a sidearmer, and he's just really fun. So I hope he gets
But we have the only 2 good Trevors in all of Major League Baseball.
It's true.
100% good Trevor coverage.
Yep. Yes.
I like that the good Trevors are getting their chances, so I hope that streak continues.
My apologies if there's another inoffensive Trevor in Major League Baseball.
Trevor Story.
Oh, okay, apologies, Trevor Story.
But
the good Trevor pitchers.
The good Trevor pitchers, yes.
Yes.
There might be another one.
We'll put it that way.
But anyway, so we also figured that we would take this opportunity, because we hadn't yet chosen our dudes for the year. And so we figured we would take this opportunity to choose our dudes, because we've done that in the past. Like, as everyone knows, Linda's dude is J.D. Davis. And my dude was Seth Lugo.
I make no apologies for that.
Maggie's dude was Ahmed Rosario that one year.
So R.I.P.
R.I.P. Although he did make a really good play in center field the other day. So we are going to pick our dudes for the year who might be kind of like a somewhat like underrated guy who we think is going to have an outsized impact, is the idea of our dudes. Like, as much like we all love Jacob DeGrom on this podcast, it's a very obvious answer, but he's not our dude because he's everyone's
dude. No, Jacob DeGrom, he's everyone's dude. Jacob DeGrom belongs to all of us.
Jacob DeGrom is the dude.
Yeah, so, he's like the dude above all dudes.
The dude above all dudes. So we're each gonna pick our dude. So let's start with Maggie. Maggie, who's your dude this year?
So not to be a little, you know, Johnny come lately with all this, but Taijuan Walker is my dude for this year, because I think he is just this super fun, positive guy, really like easy to root for as a person. And he came up with all the to do and has just been injured and never really getting into a rhythm since he was like a little baby over in Seattle. And I'm really excited to see him actually, you know, and with injuries, you just never know. But for now, he looks like the guy that he was always supposed to be. And there's something really fulfilling about that when someone, you know, comes up with this big, like, vaunted name and doesn't quite live up to it, but then has his second chance. Like, yay, we're the second chance. It's very exciting. And he looks fantastic. And he posted a really cute baby photo on Twitter the other day. A+ baby photo. More of that, please. What else?
He broke the Lindor signing.
Yes, that's right. He broke the Lindor sign. And in like the most sort of like silly tongue-in-cheek sort of way, he's like, watch this account for a half hour. He's like, hey, how's everyone doing? We're like, oh, we hate you. And then like 45 minutes later, boom. And everyone's like, God, he was behind it the whole time. But anyway, he's a really easy guy to root for. And he looks like he's pitching really good. So he's my guy. Thank you.
The Turk Wendell stuff too has been really fun.
Yeah, yes. The necklace. I love that. And the he
and Lindor seemed to both be guys who like joined the Mets and just became Mets. It's just like, okay, I'm taking this on. And Marcus Stroman was another one who like came to an organization and immediately felt like he'd been there for ages. That kind of enthusiasm is infectious. And I recall we have Walker for another year after this. So potentially he might not even qualify for a My Dude assignment next year if this season goes the way I think it will. So come on, My Dude, Taiwan Walker, get it done.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great pick. I was only in on him after game one. It's like, all right, I love him.
would run through a brick wall for this guy already.
I mean, when he signed and posted the picture of the Seaver wine, it's like, oh my God.
I was already all in.
Oh yeah, I was sold, like, immediately. And, you know, it's been a long time since people have just been excited to be Mets. Like, we're a destination now, which is just still kind of weird to think about.
Yep. So, Linda, who is your dude for this year?
This is tough because I want to say JD as always. But I'm kidding. I think that goes without saying that I love my JD. I don't know. Can I go Carrasco?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'm going to pick Carlos Carrasco because, like I've pointed out before, he gets overlooked because of the Lindor trade. And, you know, when healthy, he's, you know, he can very easily be a number two starter. Like, his stuff is filthy when he's healthy. And I was, you know, I was actually real when I saw it. I was like, oh my God, we got Lindor. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. And then even Stroman was like, and Carrasco. Like, I think Stroman had everybody's the same reaction that we all did. And I think, you know, when healthy, he could be a very key piece to this rotation, and where Jake doesn't always have to be the guy. I mean, Jake probably will always be the guy, but, you know, if they're slumping or if they're in a losing streak, you have any number of guys who can stop it, or you hope. So I think, you know, once he returns, it could be, you know, one of those game-changing, you know. We always said that this expression, like, oh, when they're healthy, it's like a free agent signing, which was always the line at the trade deadline. But it kind of is, because we haven't seen him pitch at all. So I'm going to pick Carrasco. And I think he's here for, what, another 2 years?
2 years, I believe.
2 years, yeah. So I think, you know, and with the bullpen, I mean, not the bullpen, the rotation being so uncertain next year and the year after, you know, you could lose both Stroman and Syndergaard after this year. Having him, I think, is absolutely crucial, especially having him healthy. So,
yeah, having him plus, and Walker.
Plus, he just seems like such a good dude, too. And that's another thing. Like, they just got, like, A-plus human beings. And, you know, the vibe, we talk about the vibes all the time, and, you know, they're just fun to root for. And, you know, I think, you know, especially considering bad Trevor, and how, you know, we didn't replace him, but instead we have Carrasco and Walker, who are fun and easy to root for, and that makes a huge difference as a fan. So I'm going to go with the, even without him ever throwing a pitch right now, I'm all in on Cookie Carrasco. And plus, then you can buy, like, the little cookie, like, face masks and stuff. Like,
I love just the cookie little face masks.
Yes! They're so fun. Like, it's a good, fun marketing kind of thing. Like, any little, like, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. So, like, it just adds another element of like funness to the team, and so I'm all for Cookie. And give me who doesn't love cookies?
Who doesn't love cookies?
It does feel very Apato centric. Yes. A cookie thing. It feels on brand for us.
It does.
Extremely, extremely.
I should buy the cookie masks, shouldn't I?
Yeah, I feel like you kind of have to.
Yeah.
I bought the Mets masks from the store, and they are the size of my entire head. I could wear it as a little hair kerchief.
I have Mets masks. They're adjustable,
I've met
though,
masks
nice.
Too, but I was debating about getting the cookie ones, and I got pretty ones instead, but now I feel like I have to get the cookie ones because I wanted something to wear to a Mets game, like when I can actually go again. I wanted like Mets centric
why
stuff.
Not both dot gif
that's true
I say. But yeah, so my dude, I'm gonna pick Miguel Castro as my dude. I already alluded to him when I was talking about the bullpen. He's been kind of arguably the most consistent performer in the bullpen, and his stuff is absolutely filthy. It's just he's always had issues with command, and that's been his problem ever since he was an Oriole. So I feel a special connection to Miguel Castro because anytime there is crossover Mets Orioles content, that's always on brand for me. So I like that the Mets are giving Miguel Castro a chance because he's always had the talent and the stuff. It's just a question of getting his walks under control. And so far as a Met, he has pretty much done that. You know, he's been pretty good. So I think if he can come out of this a reliable, you know, seventh inning guy as he's kind of been, then I think that's a huge win for the Mets, especially since the bullpen was an area of weakness on the team to start with, and we were all concerned about what this bullpen would look like without Seth Lugo in it. So to have another guy besides Trevor May and Edwin Diaz that they can turn to and feel reasonably confident in, that's been huge for this bullpen, and he's already had a massive impact on the games that they've won. So I'm gonna go with Miguel Castro as my dude for this year.
Like, when he's on, like, his absolute lights out, but when he's off, he is off.
Yeah, it's really, really, like, night and day with him. For sure. He's a little erratic. He throws 100 and has no idea where it's going most of the time. But he throws 100. It's very fun.
He also gets extra credit from me for being part of the vaccine.
Yes, yes.
Photo op thing that
and
they
wearing
did,
the
so.
Freaking coolest outfit too.
Yeah, like how badass did he look?
Really that, like, channeling some like Fresh Prince moment there in fashion history, and I realized when I first thought that he was not alive at that time, so I'm old.
Yep. So yeah, no, definitely extra points for that too. So yeah,
and
Miguel
also Joey Lucchese and Luis Rojas and Francisco Lindor. We should probably shout out all of them.
Yes, yep. A+ all around.
A+ for, you know, putting themselves out there and getting the vaccine publicly, especially after, you know, it seemed like there was a lot of like hesitancy to be public about one stance one way or the other. So I'm really happy to see that, especially Lindor showing leadership in that way was really a positive thing. The Mets have yet to get to 85% as far as we know, but Rojas said we're hoping to get there, so I don't know. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Well, I also realized, like, if I don't know if the 85% means fully vaccinated, because if all these guys got their first shot, then it's going to be another 21
days. Oh, yeah.
When they would get there. So, I don't know. I mean, do they have 85% first shot? Who knows? But,
because they did get Pfizer.
Yes. So that's a 21
got
days.
Johnson & Johnson. So maybe that's why the Yankees could report they're fully at the 85. I don't know. That's a good point.
Yeah. That is a good point. So one more Mets thing we have to cover before we move on to some baseball stuff. And this is just very, like, you know, it's just a very Metsy story. And it's kind of like I hope it's kind of like the last gasp of the Wilpon Mets, I'm going to call it. Oh. And hope that it really is the last gasp of the Wilpon Mets. But it came out in, it's interesting because it wasn't even its own feature article. It was kind of like buried in an article that was kind of like a hodgepodge of stuff. But buried in this Athletic article was a piece about Jed Lowry, who, as Mets fans I'm sure know, is tearing it up for the Oakland Athletics. The A's re-signed him. You know, they brought him home after, you know, basically not playing with the Mets for two seasons. And so the A's brought him home, and, you know, no one really knew what to expect, but he's, like, fully healthy and playing great and looks just like the Jed Lowry of yore. Because, of course,
and we're very happy for him. Really. Yes, this is genuinely are. But, like, come on, man.
Like, and so this prompted, you know, and, like, I, again, exactly as Maggie said, like, I am very thrilled for Jed Lowry. He deserves it. Like, of course, I'm very happy. But it prompted a lot of, like, the Mets are cursed. Of course this would happen. Like, players are only healthy when they're not with the Mets. And it's kind of like, yes, I mean, I am willing to accept that, you know, if there is some sort of higher cosmic power, it may hate the Mets in some way. But this isn't, you know, bad luck, as we found out with the Athletic article. This is, like usual, the Mets treating their players like shit and handling injuries poorly. So as it turns out, you know, and this, you know, I think you could surmise that something like this was going on because everything with the Lowry timeline and stuff was just so fishy from the out. Like, you could tell.
And they never even said what was wrong with him either.
They wouldn't talk about what was wrong. They would always, like, obfuscate around it. Like I remember the thing that sticks out in my mind and will forever be entrenched in my memory now is at Baseball Prospectus Day at Citi Field at BP Day when Brody Van Wagenen was taking questions and they asked something about, like,
VR came through again.
Yay! So VR.
VR and PR. Pilar.
VR and PR.
PR.
Pilar VR. Pilar VR.
Just like, have to that. Oh, that was a spoiler because I'm on the, like, crazy YouTube TV delay. I just saw the Pilar single and I was like, yeah, that was pretty good. I don't know why everyone's all excited.
There we go. And I think I'm allowed to say this because usually what goes on at BP Day is, you know, behind closed doors mostly. I think he said this to the media as well, so I think I'm allowed to say it. He mentioned something about the kinetic chain, and that's one thing that's going to be burned into my memory forever because it was just, like, such, like, pseudo-sciencey bullshit, just, like, talking about Lowry's kinetic chain, and I was like, they have no idea what's going on with him, or they're hiding something. And as it turns
out, wasn't it just called a lower body injury for a long time?
It was just lower body.
Like, oh, okay, yeah, no, his lower body hurts. We can see that.
His entire lower body.
Well, then plus it was fishy when he showed up with, like, this huge ass brace on. Yeah. Like, he can't play with that.
So what we learned from the Athletic reporting is that the precise injury. He was examined by, I don't know, the Mets doctor, or he was examined by the Mets and then asked for a second opinion after that examination. And that second opinion concluded that he had a knee fat impingement. Basically that knee fat pad, like, protects the patellar tendon. And so when it's damaged, it really hurts. He was recommended surgery to fix it, and the Mets would not let him get the knee surgery. So this is like shades of Carlos Beltran all over again. I mean, it's not the exact.
They're playing their greatest hits here.
Exactly, it's not the exact same injury. I don't think. I think Carlos Beltran's knee injury was of a different nature, but still required surgery to fix. The Mets did not want him to get it, and so Lowry's just sitting there in pain. And the Mets are not allowing him to get this surgery, and suddenly he gets the surgery, and now he's fully healthy again. It's like, have you learned nothing?
I don't get the reasoning behind it. Do you really want him to just sit there and not play, and you're paying him to sit there and not play? It's mind-boggling to me why you wouldn't let this poor man get the surgery.
Well, and I've groused about the state of the Players Association before, but what does it say that one of their members was injured and his boss was preventing him from getting treatment for that injury, and nary a whiff of that made it to, I mean, like, why would the union not have an interest in stepping in and, like, going public with that? Like, that seems like it should be something that they should be helping out with. I'm a little annoyed that they didn't, but also not surprised. And definitely not surprised about any of it because it was the Wilpons and that was their bread and butter.
Yeah. I'm going to leave like more people who are experts in this beyond my understanding of labor law, but or like insurance law, but like I question whether this is like outright insurance fraud on the part of the Mets. I like, is it insurance fraud? Sounds like insurance.
If I was an insurance person, I would be inclined to say yes.
Like, yeah.
So I'm going to leave that to someone who knows more about like legal stuff than I do to opine on that. But that crossed my mind. Like, is this insurance fraud?
But I would think Larry could file a grievance.
Well, the Mets threatened to file a grievance against him if he got the surgery.
Oh God.
The Mets threatened him with a grievance. Oh! That's why he didn't get it.
Sorry. more Mets, maybe though. I won't spoil it for Maggie.
Don't spoil.
Okay, yes. Hold on.
Yeah, so, we're getting there.
So that's the other
okay,
detail.
My at-bat app just spoiled it ahead of me. YouTube TV sucks, y'all.
Yay, Brandon Nimmo continues
Yay,
to
Brandon
hit.
Nimmo.
Brandon
As
Nimmo
we were
is good,
saying,
y'all.
The lead-off man, Brandon Nimmo.
Lead-off man, Brandon Nimmo. So, yeah, the Mets threatened Jed Lowrie with a grievance, and that's why he didn't get the surgery. He did get the surgery technically while he was still a Met, I think. It was once the Mets were eliminated from contention, they cleared him to get the surgery. But it didn't happen until October, which was, like, right around the time when the team was sold to Steve Cohen. But I think he was, like, cleared to get it before that, and then it happened in October. And now he's, like, a perfectly healthy, functioning baseball player, hitting home runs, as he did earlier today.
Like, we were robbed. Like, the fans were robbed. He was robbed of, like, he could have been doing this for the Mets. And
That's
for
2 years of his career. Yeah. And, like, not, yeah. You know, I mean, he's not decrepit or anything, but it's not like he's in his mid-30s. It's not like he has that many years left. Sure would have been nice if he had had those years useful with the Mets.
Especially since, you know, they were kind of hurting for offense last year. Could have been nice.
Well, positional flexibility.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, those little things that help you win ball games, which I assume is the goal.
But now we'll never know.
Be free, Jed.
Be free, Jed Lowrie.
And be happy in Oakland.
Yeah, where you know, he's had his happier years. So I wish him the best of luck. And I feel bad the way the Mets did him dirty. Like, that's terrible. And I legit thought
he was a good signing. I was like, oh, he's fine.
I did.
You know?
I was behind it. I was behind the signing.
They said he got the LASIK or whatever He had some surgery I think it was LASIK,
yeah.
And ever since then, like, they were saying he was, like, you know, his career took off. I was like, great, this is awesome. And then it was just one mysterious update after another. And
kinetic
change. Now we know why.
And then those, like, four embarrassing plate appearances in September when he, that first year, when he clearly, like, had no business being anywhere near a baseball field. And just why did any of that happen? I mean, we know why. We always know why, but, like, come on.
I am a little annoyed because he helped eliminate the Renegades from the playoffs when he was with the Cyclones. He had a key home run against them, but I'm not bitter about that.
Everyone keeps yelling at me in Amazing Avenue Slack about VR because VR, I could have picked him as my dude too, but I'm sticking with Castro because VR is also a former Oriole.
Oh yeah, Birdland. I forgot he was Birdland.
Yes,
in 2019. I think of him on the Marlins.
2019, he was the best. I mean, in 2020, he was with the Marlins and with the Blue Jays both. But 2019 was the best year of his career. He played all 162 games for the Orioles that year. He was very good for them.
Really?
He was like a 4 WAR player that year.
Wow.
Yeah, he was really good. He was really bad in 2020. Mostly with the Blue Jays. He was like okay with the Marlins and then his season went real south.
Well, Keith was so bad at him when he was on the Blue Jays. I mean, on the Marlins.
Yeah, he had the really bad series against the Mets where he looked like he, like, didn't know how to play baseball. I remember that.
Oh,
I was like,
he kept swinging at ball 4 and Keith was enraged.
I remember being like, I watched Jonathan VR a lot in 2019 and that is not this player. Like, who's this man? Hopefully the Mets version is closer to the Orioles version than the Toronto Blue Jays / Miami Marlins version.
Oh.
But speaking of, so Jed Lowry, speaking of labor issues, one quick thing to bring up, there's not a ton to, like, say about this because it's kind of a, I feel like it's, like, a developing story and we only have this one thing to go on right now and it isn't even, like, official reporting from any sort of news outlets, but, the Advocates for Minor Leaguers, like, group, tweeted, yesterday, I think it was yesterday, yeah, they tweeted yesterday, "We've learned troubling news from players at alternate training sites that some are being forced to pay for their hotel rooms while others aren't receiving meal money. Many make less than $15,000 per year. They can't speak up, but we can and will until their teams reverse course." So that's the only information we know right now, and they're urging, you know, minor leaguers to contact them if they're experiencing such issues. And so right now we don't know of any specifics on this, like which teams, which players, and we may never know. But that's not cool. Like that sucks. And ironically, the Republicans are trying to, like, specific Republicans are trying to take away MLB's antitrust exemption. In fact, I think that they were planning to, if they haven't already, they were planning to, in the coming days, introduce legislation to take away MLB's antitrust exemption, but they're doing it
Please don't own us so hard.
They're doing it as, like, payback for, like, MLB taking the All-Star game out of Atlanta because of their you know, their racist voting laws. So they are, you know, mad at MLB because of that, and so they're like, "You know what we're going to do? Take away your antitrust exemption." And again, like, everybody on the left is kind of like, "Oh no, please don't own us so hard, sir." Stop. So yes, MLB should have its antitrust exemption taken away, but because of shit like this, not because of the All-Star game. So, yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on this. We'll let you guys know if there's any developments on it, but if this is true, which I have no reason to believe anyone's lying about it, it's pretty shitty. I mean, MLB treating its minor leaguers like shit is no, you know, is no news item. This is not new. It's been happening for some time now. But they should not have to pay for their hotel rooms and they should be getting meal money at the very least. So hopefully the MILB advocates can do something to help rectify that and bring some publicity to it. In the meantime, we are bringing publicity to it by talking about it on this show. So we've got a couple of, like, kind of random grab bag crap.
Oh, wait, incidents. Is the second game 7 innings too?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, just double, because I was like, oh, it's only the fifth inning. I was like, oh, wait, it's the fifth inning.
It's like the eighth inning. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Stroman complete game incoming.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, that would be great. So we have some other sort of incidents to talk about. We talked about last week how there has been, you know, widespread is probably the wrong word because it's not like, we can't pretend that, like, everybody is expressing these views, but there have been some notable, like, anti-vax, vaccine hesitancy sort of sentiments around Major League Baseball, and Casey Sogard, wife of Eric Sogard, has been one of those more outspoken people. She made a post on her Instagram story a while back. I don't remember the exact post, but it had something to do with, you know, being mad about the protocols and being mad that they, like, make no sense and being like, you need the vaccine to do anything and
it's not fair.
My freedoms and all that stuff like that. So she was already, you know, on the shit list, so to speak. But then the other day, or, like, last night, our friend Ruth, I don't know if Ruth was the first one to notice this, but she is the one whose tweet I saw. A number of people were talking about it, but she was the one whose tweet I saw first. Took a screenshot of Casey Sogard's likes on Twitter, and the very first like that came up was a very racist tweet, which I will read, but it's fair warning that this is.
Do we have to?
We don't have to read it. She liked a very racist tweet, sort of referencing, you know, quote, black on black violence that they like to talk about in, you know, in, like, being very racist.
Just really nasty and dismissive, and like, you know, simultaneously dismissive of the extreme injustice that has occurred in, you know, another Black man being shot dead by police. And then also belittling like the actual violence that does occur within all communities of poverty, and in the Black community as well, like also kind of reducing it to this like gotcha. Well, and it was gross and stupid, and she was gross and stupid for liking it.
Yeah. And of course, this prompted her, once it started getting attention that she liked the tweet, this prompted her to be like, oh, it's a misunderstanding. And it's like, what are we misunderstanding here? Like, your likes are public and you know they're public. So I don't know what to tell you. So that happened. And sadly, it was not the only, you know, notable baseball adjacent racism this week. Yu Chang, a Cleveland infielder, tweeted a screenshot, sort of like almost like a compilation of a bunch of the shitty messages and comments he gets on Instagram after games, and they're extremely racist. Most of them, like, you know, referencing the coronavirus and things like that. And so I think it's just, and I'm sure he's not the only one, you know, it's just like he's just tweeting this as an example. And I'm sure that it happens like after every game, not just after this game that he posted about. And well, so
I think he made an error that cost them the game.
Yeah. So, yeah. He made a bad play. And so, but of course, like, you know, making a bad play, shouting online, I should say, racial epithets at people is a disproportionate reaction to a baseball game that doesn't actually matter in the grand scheme of things.
Well, and then Stroman gets that too. Like when he, after the rain delay, when, you know, everybody started screaming at him too.
Oh yeah, he got all the coded language folks after Stroman, like, showed his distaste for the way the game went down, understandably so, because that game should have never started.
He had every right to be mad.
He had every right to be upset, and he was upset, and he showed that, and of course, the fans went nuts, and all the coded language came out. Diva. The stuff that you always hear when it's players of color. Troublemaker. You know, selfish. Like, all this stuff that people would never say about a white player who did the same thing, ever.
Well, and somebody pointed out that Pete Alonso got a game called I think in 2019 it was raining, and Pete told the umpire, hey, maybe we should stop playing. So, and Pete got praised for it, but Stroman gets crap for it.
Yep. Wonder what the difference is there. And I think that Yu Chang's, you know, tweet is just, like, it's a reminder to us all that during this entire pandemic, there has been a really alarming uptake in anti-Asian racism that we need to continue to fight against every single day actively, not just passively, actively. It's really troubling and upsetting, and it sucks. And Yu Chang doesn't deserve this, and none of the Asian players in the game deserve this. It's shitty and wrong, and it makes me sad.
It makes me very sad that, you know, it's just stuff they have to deal with every day. And it shouldn't be this way. Like, I'm sure fans are saying this in the ballparks, too. It's not just on Twitter.
And worth noting that this played a role in Masahiro Tanaka deciding to return to Japan, too. Like, this, like, the way that the U.S. has handled the pandemic compared to other countries, like, It played a role. He openly admitted it. So this is, you know, this is ongoing, and we need to keep paying attention. And obviously there was the notable incident of violence that occurred against the Asian community recently that we need to continue to hold space for, in addition to the continued violence against the Black community at the hands of police. It's just shitty. It's an onslaught, and it really sucks. And it makes its way into baseball by people expressing their opinions about it.
Well, even, you know, Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Hicks debated about playing. And of course, that was handled all wrong by, you know, everybody on Twitter, because everybody has an opinion. It's like, you don't know what it's like to face racism day in and day. Like, your status doesn't change racism.
Right.
It's just this extra burden carried by I mean, in general, like underrepresented minorities, but in this case, Black players and Asian players who are actively in this moment dealing with very specific and virulent racism being directed at them in their communities. And that is something that they carry around with them every day and everything they have to do. They do all the same shit we do, but they do it with that.
An extra burden, which they shouldn't have to carry. And like, I'm not saying, like, I doubt, like, I'm sure John Carl Stanton has faced racism, but even if he never did, he's still a member of the Black community. Like, right. Just because he's a millionaire doesn't mean he doesn't care about his community. And so I don't get why you could just say, well, shut up and play, you're a millionaire, blah, blah, blah. He's still human.
It is the literal least we can do to offer some grace and empathy and understanding. If they say, like, this is all too much right now, just believe them. Just accept that.
And I just will never understand, like, obviously, I can't get in the mindset of someone who would use a racial epithet in any context, and I can't get, like, but I also can't get myself in the heads of people who, like, feel the need to direct their anger at players when their team loses as if they aren't trying their best. Like, I just don't understand ever getting mad, like, at the player and going into his DMs or his comments to say anything negative at all, racially tinged or not. Like, I can't imagine that. Like, he's trying his best. He's like, what is wrong with you? Like, he's not losing the game on purpose.
No.
Well, that's why, I mean, I have a personal, like, it's a tiny thing, but, like, my personal policy is if you tag a player in my mentions to shit on them, even if I am already complaining about them in some form or another, then you get blocked right away.
Yeah.
Because that's not cool. And if you want to be an asshole on your own timeline about it, go ahead. But don't bring that into mine.
There's just no excuse for that. There's just no excuse for, like, yelling at these people about a baseball game. Like,
it's just wanting attention. And it's such a cheap and mean way to get it.
Well, like, and also, I don't boo players. No. I've never booed a player once.
I booed Reyes.
That's fair. Yeah,
but everybody complains Stroman blocks people. Guess what? It's his Twitter. He can do whatever the hell he wants. And if that gives him mental peace of mind blocking people, then that's it. He's certainly allowed to do that. It's his Twitter account. Like, if you got caught up in a Twitter chain and he blocked the whole chain, oh well. Deal with it.
Yep. Yeah.
Not the end of the world.
No, it's not the end of the world. Somebody will tell you what Marcus Stroman tweeted. It's okay. Oh, Pete.
I tended to use Jose Reyes at bats as an excuse to go get a beer or use the restroom. That was my personal policy on it. I just, like, kind of pretended he didn't exist. I mean, like, I don't blame anybody who booed him because he deserved it, but it's just my personal policy. I don't ever boo especially my own players, even if they are shitty people. But especially not because of baseball things. Like, I don't boo when someone makes an error or strikes out in a big spot because I assume that they are always trying their best.
I mean, baseball's hard.
Baseball is hard.
It's really hard. And, you know, the people who reach the majors are the best players in the game. Even the worst player on the worst team is still among the best players in the game. And, you know, we all fail sometimes. Get them next time.
Correct. So one final note before we move on to walk-off wins. Mickey Callaway still has a job. I'm going to say this every week. Mickey Callaway still has a job, counting 2 months, 1 week, and 4 days since his suspension. He still has a job.
The world's most thorough investigation is certainly being undertaken its exact moment.
I'm sure they're up all night reading his texts.
Yeah. Rico really going over that with a fine-tooth comb. They got their magnifying glass out and their Sherlock Holmes hat on.
Yeah. Doing
yes, some this one does indeed appear to be a text.
Oh, yep. He appears to be naked in this picture. I can see.
I see. Now, can we compare that to the other naked picture? Oh, okay.
Anyway. But we will end this show on a happy note, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
I came up with my walk-off win as I was driving home up the West Side Highway and was just suddenly whisked through an incredible array of cherry blossom trees. Springtime is legit hardcore here, like peak New York City spring. And I know DC gets a lot of hype for its cherry blossoms. Japan, certainly big hype for its cherry blossoms. Not going to take that away from them. But New York does not get enough hype for the cherry blossoms. It is so beautiful. And it is this like reminder that, you know, we have made it through the hell that is New York City winter. And New York spring is the best. Like, I'm going to go see some friends in a park in a couple days and be outdoors in that like 65 degree perfection and playgrounds all day, every day. It is playground mania over here. And I just love New York City in the springtime. And I am definitely jazzing on it right now. Not anyone's best year, but at least we got some cherry blossoms and some playgrounds and cocktails on a park bench. And, you know, it's a nice time. Yeah.
That's my feel. I love how it just seems to like pop overnight. Like one day it's like nothing. And then all of a sudden it's like everywhere. There's white and pink and green. And it literally happens overnight. It's just like, oh, look at that. Look how pretty that is.
We're alive.
Yes. Spring.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. This is my first, like, DC spring, and yeah, it lives up to the hype, I'll say that. I mean, like, it isn't my first time seeing the DC cherry blossoms. I've traveled down here to see them in the past, because I always lived in Baltimore and ran the cherry blossom 10-miler, and so, like, this isn't my first go-around with the cherry blossoms, but this is my first time as a DC resident, and it just makes me ridiculously happy as well. So I totally get it. It's just like, it's so pretty, and New York does not get enough credit. You're correct, Maggie. It's a beautiful city in spring. So I just feel very lucky to also be living in a fabulous spring city during this time of year. It's really nice. Linda Servich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is Jacob deGrom. That's my walk-off win.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the walk-off win.
Preach. That's it. That's the tweet.
Exactly. Like, what more can be said, basically?
Girl.
How does he keep getting better? I don't understand. Like, what does final boss level Jake look like? Like, this is, you know, I've always loved Jake. Like, as soon as he came to the league, I was like, this is my guy. I actively love him. But, you know, these past few years, I've had to, you know, just actively get into my mind that this is historic. He's one of the best in the game, maybe one of the best to ever do it. And, you know, I don't want the discourse around him to always be the Mets offense, because you're taking away from what he's doing. And it should be about him and his talent. And, you know, that should never be taken away from him, no matter how frustrating it is. And he should just always be appreciated by everywhere, by everyone, everywhere. And I love him. And I really hope the Rockies and Coors don't screw him up. But
yeah,
still.
I hope so. All I want is for him to win a third Cy Young, because that's fast track Hall of Fame stuff.
It is. And, you know, we were talking about this on Amazing Avenue recently, and Chris was like, you know, the fact that you can kind of mention him in the same breath now with Seaver is pretty shocking, because, you know, Seaver was always like the uncatchable. And if Jake wins a third, he's getting up there. Like, yeah. I don't think he'll ever pass Seaver, because the circumstances were what they are with Seaver. Like, you can't replicate that. You know, founding the franchise and, you know, bringing legitimacy to the Mets. But talent-wise, Jake's one of the best to ever do it.
And the Mets have always sort of had great pitching.
Yeah.
And now he's the second best ever.
And he's doing it in the juice ball era. The balls were juiced when he was doing this. And he still makes it look easy. Like, he's too good. So, yeah, I'm ready for another full season of Jacob deGrom, God willing, because he is just a special talent. And it's like, just the way his teammates talk about him and the way his peers talk about him, it's like they're just as big of fans as we are, which always kind of blows my mind, like Stroman especially. So it's nice to see that, you know, the Mets, who we laugh at as a franchise, have just like somebody that people want to be or like wish they could emulate or had on their team. And, you know, it's been a long time since we had a player like that. So I need to, like, you know, take a minute and just appreciate what we have. So that's it. Jacob deGrom, walk-off win. I appreciate you.
I'm hoping that it's not the last time that Jacob deGrom is one of our walk-off wins this year.
No. Many more.
So my walk-off win for this week is that I got vaccinated last Wednesday. Woo! So it'll be like a week ago when people hear this, which is very exciting. It was the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which was in the news today. I woke up to a flurry of messages and things from people. You know, it was quite a roller coaster of a day. Because obviously, as folks may or may not have heard, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is currently like on hold from being used. Basically, they hit the pause button on it because 6 people out of the millions and millions that have received Johnson & Johnson doses in the U.S. Have had a very severe adverse reaction, a type of blood clot that is very rare. So this is, a lot of people have been making the connection between the increased risk of clotting with hormonal birth control and with this shot, because obviously the risk of blood clots with hormonal birth control is much higher than the risk is with this shot, but they're different types of blood clots. I want to make sure people know that. These blood clots are is a much more rare form of clotting, and it's more severe. So people had this reaction. One person did die from this reaction. And so it is only 6 people out of millions. Again, got to emphasize that. But out of an abundance of caution, the FDA decided to push the pause button while they figure out what is going on with these folks who had this reaction. Right now, the only thing we know about them is that they were all women. But, you know, just being a woman alone is clearly not enough of a risk factor. Otherwise, we would have had way more complications. So there's something else going on with these 6 people, and they don't know what, and they're trying to figure that out. And that's why they pushed the pause button. I assume that they will resume, you know, administering J&J doses again at some point, hopefully soon. And I do also want to emphasize that the U.S. had sort of the luxury of being able to push the pause button on this because we have the manufacturers of the vaccines in-house here in the United States. And so we are able to sort of pick up the slack with the J&J doses that are now no longer being administered by with Pfizer and Moderna doses instead. So we're able to, you know, not have it negatively impact the vaccine campaign too much, as President Biden emphasized today. But other countries are not so lucky. They have to get their shots from elsewhere. And so that's why places like Canada, the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is not approved in the United States, that has a very similar adverse reaction to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine at an even higher rate, is being used in Canada, despite the fact that this reaction exists, because they have done a cost-benefit analysis and decided, you know, it's the risk of COVID for these groups is higher than the risk of these blood clots. And they're probably going to have to make a similar analysis with J&J. So just going on my science soapbox for a minute to say that while this is obviously upsetting, that this is happening, and I really hope it doesn't, you know, have an impact on vaccine hesitancy and people using it as an excuse to not get the shot, please get the shot, people. You'll still be able to get Pfizer or Moderna that do not have these reported side effects. And I got the J&J shot. I am theoretically in this risk group. I would still get it 100 times out of 100. This is a lightning risk. This is like the risk of getting struck by lightning is about the same as the risk of getting this adverse reaction. So just...
And pushing the pause button is the system working.
Yeah. Exactly.
This is, like, you know, this is how small a potential problem can be and still get caught and yes. still get addressed. You know, so it's not like there are all these secret dangers lurking beneath the surface.
Yeah. Like, this is the system, the oversight system and science working exactly as it should. And I emphasize that a lot today in my tweets and stuff like that, because I think it's frustrating because when it comes to hesitancy, it's kind of a lose-lose situation with things like this, because either you look into this extremely rare adverse reaction and people ask why you're doing it and freak out, or you don't look into it and people ask why you aren't looking into it, you know? And so, like Maggie said, this is the system working as it should. We are catching these very rare complications and we're looking into them and, you know, being as cautious as possible. So I think that if anything, it should be heartening to people. But yeah, so get vaccinated. I got J&J. I'm okay. I'm fine. And I'm very excited that in 1 week I will be officially fully vaccinated. So that is my walk-off win for this week. Thank you, science. So that is my walk-off win. In the meantime, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. We have game recaps every day for you guys, analysis posts, morning news every day. We're in full regular season mode. So check out our game threads every day. Come chat with us about the game. Hopefully, Mets baseball continues to go on unimpeded by weather and COVID. You know, as we hope it does. You can follow Amazing Avenue on all the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Cerevich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Follow each of us on Twitter. Follow the show on Twitter. Please subscribe to the podcast, Amazing Avenue Audio, wherever you get your podcasts from. Rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting.